Welcome to the Perspectives on Healthcare podcast, where members of the medical community from different roles, venues, and locations share their unique perspectives on quality healthcare, its future, and how to improve it. Now, from the Your Keynote Speaker studio in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, here is your host, Rob Oliver.
Thank you, and welcome to another edition of Perspectives on Healthcare. My guest today is Tim Hindmarsh. He is a primary care physician located out in Oregon, and he is a member of the baby boomer generation. Tim, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Just a great privilege to be here.
Absolutely delighted to have you. So tell me a little bit about yourself and your role in healthcare, please.
Okay, so I was actually born in Canada and educated there. My wife and I immigrated to the United States in 1994. She's also a primary care doctor. For two reasons, I wanted to be close to the gorge. I was windsurfing a lot back then. And I also enjoyed, you know, mountain activities, skiing and whatnot. So geography was important. And we wanted a rural job, wanted a full scope of practice. So I worked in the ICU. I admitted patients to the hospital, saw tons of patients during the day in my office, delivered, you know, tons of babies over the, you know, my 12 years of obstetrical practice. It's crazy now because I have all these kids that are bringing in their kids that I ended up delivering that I, you know, you bump into at the store and whatnot. It's really been super rewarding. I transitioned over to urgent care almost 10 years ago. And since the pandemic started, have been working almost exclusively in an outpatient COVID clinic in two different communities, in Eugene, where the University of Oregon is, and in our small town that we live. It's a town of about 11,000 people, and we've actually been very aggressive in early treatment with monoclonal antibodies, nutraceuticals, and so forth.
Okay. It's very interesting because what you're doing, you've had the experience both of the rural setting and the more urban setting. Can you talk a little bit about the difference in either in practice or in the patients that you're seeing, or, you know, what's your experience in the difference between the more urban setting and the more rural setting?
You know, it's amazing how not different they are. That's the real difference isn't necessarily so much in, you know, in the clientele. There's a little bit. I mean, you don't get a lot of chainsaw wounds in Eugene, or, you know, I have out here. It's more in your scope of practice. And you know, so my scope of practice was obviously fairly huge, initially. You know, I would assist on my own, my patient's surgeries. You know, like I said, work, you know, take call in the ICU, inpatient. That's all kind of gone away, even in rural areas. That's been about a 15 years ago that all transitioned. Hospital systems employ largely hospitalists, so inpatient work is done by inpatient specialists. A lot of there's still a few family doctors that deliver babies, but not that many. That honestly was the most rewarding part of my career, especially as a younger doctor. It built my practice very rapidly. It got me some very amazing connections to families, because there's really nothing more, you know, human and intense than starting a family and raising a family and being able to be an advisor and an observer in people's lives and be able to walk next to that was just a massive privilege. And then to move into more of the acute care setting, do just medicine. You know, there's a lot of sort of social work that's been pushed into medicine for, you know, good, bad, or otherwise. And I like connecting with people, but I also like diagnosing and treating, which has been really very rewarding in the urgent care setting. So it's more scope of practice for the physicians. I mean, there's still very rural areas in the United States where, you know, you're covering the ER, you're doing more than minor surgeries and so forth. Like in Canada, it was amazing. Like we had, I mean, if you delivered babies and you were a family doctor, you did C-sections. That you had to.
Right. But yeah. So I have a whole new appreciation for rural medicine physicians from this perspective. We I had John Cullen on who practices up in Valdez, Alaska, and he covers an area about the size of the state of Ohio, and it basically has to be all things to all people when it comes to his patients. Let me ask you this. What does quality healthcare mean to you?
Well, I mean, I think that there's several pillars that you need to kind of tick the boxes off. And, you know, for me as a doctor, you know, kind of putting myself in the patient's role, which I think is, you know, really what we're supposed to do, and having been a patient myself, you know, so I think number one, what people really want is want access. You know, so if you have a problem, you can get access when you need it. I think, you know, that's a whole bunny trail you can go down on how much access is too much, because I think that there's an issue there. But clearly, if you're sick, you need to see somebody. And you should be able to see somebody that's competent. I mean, obviously, that's a huge part of quality. So somebody that has reasonable training. And then I think somebody that you can relate to. I think that that's something that's sort of forgotten in a lot of the political debate that goes on surrounding healthcare, which is, you know, this whole idea of, you know, you can keep your doctor or whatever. Well, that's a really, really big deal. And, you know, my bias is because I come from primary care. You know, these are relationships that I've built with people over decades. And that's a value that you bring to the doctor-patient relationship and an efficiency to the practice of medicine that you can't easily replace by just plugging in more people. You know, that relationship building is why I did primary care. I mean, I could have been a surgeon or a, you know, orthopedist or whatever, but I chose that because of the connection with patients. And I chose rural healthcare specifically because of the scope of practice sort of times the connection to patients.
Yeah. Again, it's interesting to hear you say that, because so many times you end up, you know, I'm here in Pittsburgh, and sometimes you go into a practice and it's almost plug and play, where you may not see the same physician on consecutive visits, and you're not building that relationship. You're not establishing the rapport, and you're not getting, as a patient, you're not getting to share your story with the same person all the time. And as a practitioner, they're not getting to know me as an individual to see what, you know, how my visits play out and how it all impacts my life. Can you give me an example of quality healthcare?
I'll give you a really, really simple example of quality healthcare, because it's front of mind for everybody right now. Our private clinic that we started 5 months ago sees COVID patients. We see sick patients. Okay. So some need treatment, and we've been very fortunate working with the Oregon Health Authority to be able to get our hands on what appears to be enough monoclonal antibody. But this one case in particular, I saw, great guy, salt of the earth person, calls up his pediatrician at the local, you know, larger health system, and there's tons of them all over the country, and wants to have his, you know, 6-year-old seen. And it's like, no, because she might have COVID. And I'm like, it's a sick kid. Didn't you go to medical school to see sick people? And so we said, hey, you know, bring her in. Super simple visit. It doesn't have, you know, your child is fine. This is a virus. We can rule COVID in and out, whatever you want. Doesn't have an ear infection. Doesn't require antibiotics. You know, the father's super happy. The kid's happy. The visit wasn't super long. The connection was real. And they were gone in, you know, 10 or 15 minutes. I think that's a quality visit. The person had an acute problem. They were seen in a timely manner. And then, you know, their concerns were addressed or treated as needed, and they can go about their day. I mean, where they were bumping into all of these restrictions in other areas when they were trying to explore this, which to me is just a complete mystery.
Yeah. And that's, ultimately, to me, people go to see medical professionals in order to be able to live their life, whether they want to continue doing what they're doing as in a wellness visit, they want to get back to what they're doing as in recovering from a broken arm or something, or adapting to a new life circumstances as in a diabetes diagnosis. It's all about living their life. And what you're talking about is people with a sick kid. You can't go to work when your kid is sick, all of those things. And so you, by getting the treatment for the child, you actually have a major impact on the parent's life as well. What do you wish people understood about your role in healthcare?
What do I wish that they understood about my role? Yeah, I guess, you know, that's a tougher question, because when you live in your own, like I've been doing this for so long, it's kind of like a fish describing water to a certain degree. I talked to one of my colleagues about this. I think the most important part about understanding sort of the physician, especially the primary care physician's role, is health is your health as the patient or the client or whatever is your business. And so my isn't to tell you what to do. I would think that if you're going to be a really effective primary care doctor or even an ER doctor or whatever, my job is to come alongside you and be more of a coach than this sort of paternalistic concept that, you know, my parents grew up with. So for instance, you get into a situation where there's a problem, you know, you have a player that got penalized and they come to the bench and the coach grabs them by the face mask and reams them out. Is that appropriate coaching? Yes, it is. So that would be like in an emergency situation. It's like, this is what we're going to do. You know, we're going to take you to surgery. We're going to take out your infected gallbladder because you're going to die. And you go, yep, okay, coach, that do it. But for so much of what afflicts us in North America, you know, these are lifestyle diseases for the most part, which I have very little power to affect the most efficient and lasting change to. I can prescribe hundreds and hundreds of dollars of medications for a type 2 diabetic, or for a fraction of that cost, I could send them to a personal trainer that would potentially work on, you know, diet and exercise habits, which would be at least as effective, if not usually wildly more effective, plus affect their overall health.
Yeah. So it's interesting to me because I'm hearing what I'm thinking about is an insurance company will pay for hundreds and hundreds of different medications. But as far as getting them to pay for a personal trainer, that doesn't seem to be viewed as healthcare. Do you have a comment on that at all?
Well, it depends on how far down the rabbit hole you want to go. I left primary care during the rollout of the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. And I had, you know, sat on a parent board of about $1 billion a year healthcare network here. And I saw the changes that came originally with the stimulus package, you know, with what we call, you know, their metrics. Okay, so they're quality metrics. So you know, how many patients do you have that you're checking blood pressure regularly, et cetera, et cetera. So some of the metrics are great. I mean, makes sense, reminds you. You get reimbursed a little bit more if you do the metrics correctly. But I started to kind of see something, and the paranoid side of my brain was like, how come all of the metrics, the way to meet the metric is to prescribe more pills? You know, so they don't really say that. Okay, so for instance, you know, the hemoglobin A1C is the percentage of glycosylated hemoglobin. So it's a long-term measure of blood sugar control, all right? So we use it as a benchmark test in diabetics. So you want a hemoglobin A1C of 7% or less. So there's lots of ways to achieve that, you know. So type 2 diabetics are not insulin dependent. Lots of them are on insulin, but they will survive without insulin. They will have very high blood sugars. So those people are generally not physically fit and are obese or morbidly obese. So you can treat that with exercise, with diet, you know, with mindset change, with all sorts of things that are not pharmaceutical. But you can't really prove that that works very well. You know, there's no randomized controlled trial for exercise. How would you blind it? It would be impossible. And there's not a tremendous amount of money in the fitness industry. I mean, there's the fitness industry itself is a multi-billion dollar industry, but in each individual case, it's hard to, you know, monetize that in a way that's as easy as monetizing pills.
Right.
So what do you end up with? Well, plus you market it to the client that, you know, you take the pill and it makes the problem go away. And so we're all inherently, you know, want to do the least amount that we can for the most amount of outcome. That's just human behavior. So of course, if somebody said I could take a pill and be in perfect shape and not have back pain, why wouldn't you take it? Right.
Yeah.
But the reality is always much more difficult than that.
Definitely. All right. We've got about 4 minutes left. So what excites you about the future of healthcare?
I think that the solutions in healthcare will be solved a lot by the stuff, by things that we have completely no ability to kind of comprehend. Okay. So if you look at what happened in the arts, like music. So people would go to a music conference and somebody would tell them about different, you know, new instruments or whatever. And then eventually they became computer conferences because the way you interfaced and recorded music was all digitally. And I think that the solutions in healthcare are not going to come from where we think they're going to come from. Hmm. I think they're going to be very novel and kind of outside our normal paradigm. I mean, the way we see patients now is how we saw patients 150 years ago. You know, you get sick, you go to a doctor's office, the doctor does something to you, prescribes a medication, and, you know, you get better or you don't get better. I mean, that just seems like that's not how we do anything else now. I mean, we're communicating, you know, digitally, and it's working great, and you can produce all this amazing content doing that. And you know, I've done a fair bit of telehealth in the last 2 years. It's still really clunky, but I think there's going to be remote ways we do healthcare. Very innovative, coming not from doctors and not from healthcare systems. I think it's going to be, you know, the kind of very outside the box thinkers in Silicon Valley, startups, young people that really revolutionized this. And that makes me really quite excited because the present paradigm we're going on right now is just, I mean, financially, at least, it's just not sustainable.
Got it. All right. Last question for you. What is one thing medical professionals can start doing today to improve the quality of healthcare?
The one thing is it sounds really super trite, but it's called healthcare. And so if you don't focus on caring for people, and if that's not what you want to do, then you need another job. Mm-hmm. And I have been very disappointed in my profession in the last 2 years with regards to people just, you know, the not questioning, the just kind of going along to get along. There's been a lot of cowardice because, you know, it's a reasonably well-paying job with some esteem still. And it's like, you know, doctors not seeing sick people. Doctors get, I mean, people calling up and saying, I chose to not get vaccinated and getting reamed out by the office staff. I mean, it's inappropriate. I mean, would you do that if somebody had a different sexual orientation than you or a different view of some other potentially contentious thing? Of course you wouldn't. I mean, like, it's not care.
Yeah. What a powerful message, that the reminder that the important part of healthcare is the care part. What a great way to wrap up our interview today. Listen, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts. I encourage people, I will put a link in the show notes to your podcast as well. Tim Hindmarch, thanks for being on here and thank you for sharing your perspective on healthcare.
Thanks for listening to Perspectives on Healthcare. Visit perspectivesonhealthcare.com to learn more about Rob Oliver or to subscribe so you never miss an episode. If this podcast was valuable, we'd appreciate a review on iTunes. Or if you tell a friend or coworker about the show, that would be helpful too. Join us again next time for more Perspectives on Healthcare.